Grief has been called the universal emotion. The reason it's universal is every one of us in this room and everyone that you know and everyone that you do not know will have to face and deal with grief in one or two ways. Either you will grieve over something or someone significant in your life, or at one time when you're gone, they will grieve over you. So grief is 100%. And for that reason, then, we need to know as much as we can possibly know so that we can be better equipped, be less anxious, and also hopefully be of great help to someone in need when they need someone that not only cares, but at least they begin to understand. We're starting on page 5 this evening, what everyone needs to know about grief. We won't look at each one of these in great detail because of time frame. But you know, grief is something that's natural. It's something that occurs in everything of life. As we talked last evening, grief is caused by many other things than just the death of someone. And so when that happens, then it's something that we need to understand. Now, unfortunately, in many parts of our land, folks would suggest and would think that grief is not natural and it's also unhealthy. And that's the way they perceive it. And therefore, sometimes when you're dealing with individuals like that, then you're wondering, why are they reacting? Why are they feeling the way they're, why are they saying the things that they're saying? It's because to them, grief is an affront that they don't want to deal with. And let's face it, none of us volunteer for grief. It just happens. It affects us with our whole being. Now, let's just think about it for just a moment. And we want to do as much interaction as we can, realizing that we're in a larger facility. But how is it that grief affects a person emotionally? What are some thoughts about that? How does grief affect our emotions? What does it make us do? It makes us sad. It makes us cry a lot. What else? It makes us upset. It makes us anxious. At some point, it makes us angry sometimes, particularly if we're dealing with some situation that we can't understand, or perhaps the person that we're dealing with, they can't understand it, and therefore there's a lot of frustration in regard to dealing with that. Ma'am, you had your hand up. It changes about everything. It really does. When grief comes into our life, it's like something, particularly if we've never grieved before in regard to a serious kind of loss, then it's something like we've never, ever faced before. How does it affect us physically? Or how can it affect us physically? Paralyzes us. Right, what else?
Stop eating.
You don't feel like eating, or just the opposite. You want to eat all the time. Sleep habits. Can be tremendous, can't sleep at all. Or just the opposite. I just want to sleep all the time. You just feel sick. You feel unhealthy. I had a lady that in one of my first classes, she had been dealing with a loss, and she went to the medical doctor, and he ran all the tests. He said, "Ma'am, there's nothing absolutely wrong with you. Hold on. How long ago has it been since your son was killed, an adult son?" He said, "Let's see if that may be it." because she was experiencing or showing some physical symptoms that had no biological test answers to. And he said, I want you to go to this class. And she did. Grief affecting us mentally? How so?
Why me?
Why me? Exactly. Yes, ma'am, in the back.
Depressed.
Exactly.
Irrational thinking.
Exactly.
Irrational behavior.
Irrational thinking, which leads to irrational behavior, which leads to what we consider to be irrational consequences, but they're the natural consequences of what we've been thinking about that's irrational. Now, I'm not going to ask anybody to raise their hands, but I've been told in grief situations, people are losing things like car keys, their glasses, other parts of what they use every day.
Cell phones,
exactly. I had a lady that told me she came in one day and she had her keys in her hand. She had her billfold in her hand that had her driver's license and the money. She had with her at the grocery store, she had bought eggs and bacon. About supper time, she started looking for the eggs and bacon. She went to the refrigerator. Guess what she found? She found her keys and she found, her keys and her billfold in there. And she kept thinking, what in the world is that doing there? Where are my eggs? Where's my bacon? And then it dawned on her. When I come in from the grocery store, I typically take my keys and my billfold and I put them, regardless of whether you think it's a great idea or not, I put them underneath my bed, underneath my pillow on my bed. She went to her bed. Guess what was there? Yeah, eggs. And she said, "I'm losing it." A lady walked into one of my classes one day late, and she sat down sort of by herself and just observed our discussion. And after we had a break, and I went up to her, I said, "Ma'am, glad to have you with us, and I know this is your first time." I said, "I hope it was helpful for you." She said, "Yeah, I found out I'm not the only crazy person that lives in this town." Because you see, she was thinking, "I am losing it." She found out she was grieving. And it will affect you in far different ways than you can ever imagine. It's hard to focus. It's hard to get a simple task accomplished. You can't do a lot of stuff. You can't handle a lot of processing of information. And so therefore, and the reason for that is we're dealing with stress, we're dealing with depression, we're dealing with all these other things that are going on. The brain sometimes becomes foggy in regard to dealing with grief. And for that reason then, those of us who are supposed to be helping them, we need to be on the other side thinking, you know what? They may be dealing with some of these issues and we need to be doing what? More patient, more kind, more compassionate, less expectations of them. Ma'am, someone in the back? Yes, ma'am.
I was going to say more compassionate.
Yeah. Because they're going through some stuff that they've never gone through before. And then I've got there, grief affects a person spiritually.
Why me?
Yes, sir. Okay, God allows the evil to reign, to fall on the just and the unjust, or on the evil and the good. Yeah. And Job asked over and over again, why me? Particularly after Zophar, Eliphaz, and Bildad kept saying, you really messed up with God. And Job said, no, I didn't. I'm not perfect, but I didn't do anything to cause this. What are some issues, spiritually speaking, that we may face dealing with grief? Yes, sir. Getting what? Getting angry with God. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands, but I have an idea. You've probably been there before. God, if I follow you and if I obey you and if I love you and if I serve you, then why has all this happened to me? I believe it was Judges chapter 6. Who was it that basically asked that question to God? God, if you're for us, why has all this happened to us? I've forgotten the guy's name. Gideon, thank you, Gideon. He is worth something over here. I mean, glad he's here. Gideon, yeah. Gideon, that's basically the question he asked. God, if you're with us, then why has all this happened to us? And it's really easy to ask that question. You know, I mentioned last evening about the idea of the difficulty sometimes coming into church, and because the first time particularly, because of all the nuances and all the situations that we're involved in regard to the past with our loved ones. And in one of my classes there at Lincoln, one time I asked, we were talking about God, grief, and you. And we were talking about some of these issues, and we talked about the difficulties of coming into the building and those kind of things. And a lady said, I want to say this. And I said, I'm not trying to discourage or dispute what others have said. But she said, my husband was a faithful member of the church, a deacon of the church, and he was involved in so many wonderful good works. When I walk into a building on Sunday morning or on Wednesday night, my thought is, I am the closest to my husband this side of heaven right now. And thus, when I'm in the presence of God with my brethren who love me and who are patient and kind and long-suffering with me, I cannot help but smile because I know that I'm where my husband would want me to be. He's closer to God right now than I am, but this is the closest that I can get to God this side of heaven. Think about that. But it affects us spiritually speaking, which means that we need to be careful and we need to be understanding, and we need to help people. You know, I always say that when it comes to grief, instead of breaking the part, the relationships, we want to put back people back to God. That's our job. Spiritually, intellectually, educationally, emotionally, physically, we want to get them back to God. But when it comes to grief, there can be a disconnect. I want to do everything I can to put them back together again. And I do that by the way I love and care for them and help them with their issues of life. Number three, grief is always an individual emotion, a matter. You cannot know. You cannot know. Can I say it one more time? You cannot know how another person feels. You think you do. And even if it was the exact kind relationship of loss, that's your loved one and that's their loved one. And there's a difference there. So just avoid saying, I know exactly how you feel, because you really don't. Number four, it's a multifaceted emotion. There's no stage-by-stage progressions. We'll say more about that in just a moment. Grief can be a result of different kinds of losses. We talked about that last evening. But let me say this. The hardest loss in all the world is one in which the grief loss has not died, has not gone away. That's the most difficult grief loss, because you see, as we used the phrase last night in regard to divorce, there's no closure. Now, this particular loss was said in regard to a loved one of theirs that was incarcerated. And they said, as long as they are in prison and as long as they are alive, my loss, my grief continues. I was not going to argue, because from their perspective, that was certainly the case. A person's feelings of grief will be directly affected by the significance of that loss. Likely tomorrow, if you're a biblical church, there'll be some kind of announcements. We all have announcements, or at least there'll be an announcements page. We all understand that. And if you have someone on that announcement page that has mentioned a member of this congregation that is sick or has had a death relationship, and I mean, we don't mean in disrespect, Don and I will be very sorry about that situation. But we don't know who that individual is. You do. The closer you are to the relationship, the greater the potential for loss. Thus, think about the closest relationships we have in life. Mom, dad, brother, sister, father, mother, husband, wife, grandmother, granddad. All those close relationships, based upon our dealing with them, are why we sometimes hurt more than we do from other kinds of losses. If you don't mind writing there on your notes, let me give you this mathematical equation. Real simple. Love plus loss equals grief. Let me explain. Love. The attachment of emotions you have for that individual, the relationship you have with that individual, if it's a person that we're dealing with, all those thousands of days and thousands of things that you've done to show and receive love from that individual are all made up in that relationship. Plus, the loss that you're going to sustain by them not ever being around with you presently in this world. And that loss is great. And it's ever changing. And it's something that we can't get used to. Equals, potentially, the grief we're going to have. The closer you are to that relationship, the greater the potential the loss will be. When someone says to someone that has been married to someone for 50 years, and 3-4 years or 3-4 weeks or 3-4 months later on, they say to them, "You're not over this by now?" Think about it. They had 50 years of life together. Good and bad, perfect, imperfect, but that was life for them. That's what they were all about. And so we got to remember, the closer you are to the relationship, the greater the potential, the situation. Number 7, grief changes a person. And I wish we could talk for the rest of the night about this one. We can't. But we're going to be different. Now, thankfully, once you are able to get beyond your grief journey, notice I didn't say over, because you don't ever get over a grief journey. But when you get beyond it, typically people begin to become a much more compassionate, kind, loving, and understanding person. Henry Nouwen wrote a book in which he said, we become wounded healers. We're wounded, but then we heal and we go out and try to help others as well. So when any kind of grief loss, not just the loss of an individual, then we're going to be changed by that. The last one I think is very important. There's no real set time limits in regard to a person's grief process. We don't ever get over grief. Should we want to get over someone that meant the world to us in the first place? I don't think so. Therese Rando is one of the famed thanatologists in our country today, and she said in her classic book, as long as a person is grieving normally, they can and will grieve in one way or the other for a lifetime. Now, that doesn't mean that the pain that they feel the first week is going to be the same pain they're going to feel 10 years later. It's going to be different. But the point of the matter is, it's okay to grieve. Someone mentioned back here around the middle of the 9/11, do you think every every 9/11 that there are families across America and across the world that say, oh, I'm going to skip that holiday this year. Not in this world. Not a chance. They're always going to remember that. And as we're going to talk about in a few moments, it begins to mellow out. Well, we could talk again. We could sit here on this one page for the rest of the evening. But what I've asked Don is to come up, and we're going to go through material that, and I'm glad really that David chose this, because this is one of our ODs that we have done years ago, how a person feels when they're dealing with grief. And it's rather long, and I realize that we cannot do much justice to it, but that's why you have the notes. Because we want you to understand that when you're dealing with some of these losses, why are you feeling the way that we feel? In Huntsville, Alabama, if you ever go to Huntsville, there's a mock-up of the 5-stage rocket, the Saturn rocket that took man to the moon in 1969. Huntsville Redstone Arsenal built that engine for it to go to the moon. 5-stage rocket, and it's literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The thing at the top is what got them to the moon and back. Well, that's not the way grief works. Phases. So what we did several years ago, and this has been several years ago, we went back and we got a bunch of books. And we just said, okay, what are all these experts saying about phases and stages and feelings? And so we just sort of put them all together in these 10 different numberings. Please don't get caught up in regard to these numbers and saying, okay, I went through number one, because again, these are phases, they change. And so we all want to remember that. But look at the first one, shock and denial. Why? Why do we deal with shock and denial when we deal with some kind of grief loss? We can't believe it's happening. We can't believe it's happening to us. We can't believe that this happened to us. The body's made away, and sometimes we go into a shock situation, and it's for our own protection. But there's a lot of notice. Normal shock may last from a few moments to a few hours, even to a few days. When tragedy happens, point number three, there may be changes within the body, heart palpitations, dizziness, tightness of muscles, loss of appetite, sensation, just one feels anesthetized. And see, tragically, during those times of shock and denial, we unfortunately have to start making a lot of decisions. And those are hard, tough decisions. Don?
Also, part of the idea of shock is because of the nature of the death. It may well be that someone died unexpectedly. I'm just thinking about someone of our congregation. I start a grief class for our church this coming Wednesday night, and his wife was asleep in the bed with him, and he gets up to do something and then comes back and she's dead. And there was, later on they determined that there were some heart issues, but needless to say, complete shock, because, he kisses his wife goodnight, he's in the bed with her, and he gets up and then he comes back later on and he realizes she's not moving, and there was nothing, of course, they could do. And sometimes it may be that you're not with that loved one that passes away, whether it be in an accident or whether it be in a nursing home or whether it be in the hospital. COVID has certainly made things harder, because sometimes you cannot be with your loved ones. I'm thinking about an elder's wife back home, and the only thing they could do was park outside the parking lot and await, instructions because of the nature of COVID. And she was a therapist, and so, occupational therapist. And so even then, they would not allow her to be a part of being inside with her mom. And that was one of the voids, not only the way she died, but also not being able to be present. Or you get the phone call in the middle of the night that someone has passed away at the nursing home. All of that can cause that sense of unreality, because we think with our heart rather than our head, and rightly so. And you know, we just aren't ready to hear those news. I used to be a chaplain for the police department in our area, now a fire department chaplain. But, you know, typically the phone calls that I get are the ones of sudden situations where, you know, there's been a fire. You don't expect a fire, right? And yet they, you know, someone didn't get it out. Or I remember on one occasion as they came and picked me up, the police did, and we went to two situations, and one was a drowning. You don't get ready for anything like that. And then another was a shooting. Again, you don't get ready for things like that. And yet that night, I had both of those situations that we had to go and give the news to. And so, you know, shock and numbness are very much a part of the grief process, and can easily, even in the grief process, come and go. I mean, it's not uncommon for a person, you know, sometime later to wake up and say, wait a minute, it was just a bad dream. It really didn't happen. But it really did happen. But you have those thoughts. And a lot of times people will often have dreams about their loved ones. Nothing uncommon at all about that. That just shows the attachment that you have and the love that you have for them. And so shock and numbness are very much a part of the grief process.
Look on the on page number 6, the number 5. And here's where we're not even going to read it. But I want you, if you're dealing with some kind of grief loss the past few years, I want you tonight, or sometime when you want to do so, maybe you want to wait till tomorrow or the next day, but I want you to go through that list that Dr. Bill Flatt wrote in his excellent book on mental health, and just check or circle those feelings that you're dealing with right now. And you're thinking, wow. Because if you look at those feelings, if you look at those emotions, if you look at those actions, all that's a part of this idea of denial. Remember, Don showed someone, one of the young ladies over here, what's in the middle of this huge grief ball? And the answer is denial. Because it's so easy for us to want to deny the situation. It is so easy for us to come up with this idea, you know, the best thing that I can do about my grief is for me to go inside my house, turn off the lights, quit answering the phone, sort of build a moat around my house, figuratively speaking, and just take care of me and me alone, and I'll be okay. It doesn't work that way. Because you know what will happen? You will become your world's worst enemy. Because you're dealing with you. And you know what you're going through. And that's why we need other people. And in this case, that's why we need the church, our church family. Number 2, and again, please don't get caught up on these. Okay, this is number 2, but we had to take all of this and sort of put it all together. Emotions, lamentations, crying. Sometimes people show those, sometimes they don't. You know, it's easy for us to ask the question, well, how are you doing? And they're saying, they may have been bawling their eyes out before they got to the building, but they've cleaned their makeup off or off and then put it back on. Or the men have taken care of all the tears. I'm fine. But they may have had a rough morning that morning. This is often a time for anger, hostility, lament, protestation. It's a time to you know, really. And again, this takes months, possibly can take months in this regard. Don, go ahead.
Sometimes we live in a world in which tears bother people. Someone starts crying in our presence, and we may tend to shy away. Sometimes sometimes children even make fun of someone who is crying. John 11:35, which many of us probably learned as our first verse in the Bible, right? Jesus wept. Shows us differently. You look at the context there, and our Lord loved this person, loved Lazarus. And he knows that he has the ability to bring him back, which he does. But still, there is that emotion. And we need to make sure that people feel comfortable crying in our midst. If they can be happy and we can rejoice, can we do the other as well? Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who do rejoice and weep with them that weep. Because they're going to look for some place where they can show their emotions. The question is, can they do it in your presence? In the church's presence? Because if not, they may look elsewhere. And we need to make sure that it is a natural emotion. Also, just because a person does not cry does not mean that they have emotion. I had a lady in our class. She was from Athens, Alabama. In the 10-week grief class that I had, she would come one of the longest distances. And only when we talked about the Bible and grief, and Ron will be doing that Sunday morning in his lesson, only when we got to that point did she writes something to me. And what she wrote was, for the first time, I saw myself for who I was in the funeral or grief process. My sister died, and I was the one that took care of the funeral arrangements. I was the one that went and made, you know, wrote the obituary. I was the one that ultimately made the decision for her to be cremated. I was the one that went and picked up the ashes. And she was talking about all these things that was going on. And she said, I did it all without tears. Until the other day in the class when you talked about the value of tears. And she said, I went home and for the first time, and I forgot the period of time, I cried like a baby. Thank you for letting me do that. As I mentioned last night, tears are a part of all our body processes, men as well as women, children also. And so just because, you know, some folks have tear duct issues, they may not be able to put or produce the tears. Don't negate or think the idea that just because a person is not showing emotion, they have no emotion. They may just be waiting to see if you allow it. Does that make sense? If you will allow them to cry in their presence, or you will allow them to show their feelings, whatever the case may be, and how important it is. And in the Bible, we often see examples where there were folks, and we're going to talk about this Sunday, but Job's three friends, whatever they said, first of all, begin by doing the right thing. They were there, they sat with him in that circle of pain, and they tried to feel what he felt. And when you have people who are willing to do that, you may forgive a few things they say, or you may overlook a few things because their presence says so, so very much. It's not words, it's actions. Sometimes the least you say, the better. Sometimes your presence says it all. And that means a great deal.
Bible trivia time. When is the first time in Scripture, and to whom did it refer to, in regard to someone exhibiting grief? In regard to the loss of someone significant. First time in Scripture. Do we have any nominations? I do this all the time at Lincoln, and they hate it. They just hate it.
Sir, can I choose?
I'm sorry. Yes, I guess it's not in the notes, so I guess I'll allow you to.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's really nice of him. Was it the marriage of Jacob and Esau's son that were in grief of mind?
That's chapter 38.
I'm sorry. That's in Genesis, though.
It's in Genesis.
It's not Abel?
No. Chapter 23, verses 1 and 2. When Abraham lost Sarah, it says that he mourned and wept for her for many days. First time in Scripture. And if you, interestingly enough, the entire chapter 23, is just that one subject. Taking care of her body, finding a place to put it, and to honorably take care of her remains. In the beginning, Abraham, the great friend of God, mourning and weeping over Sarah's loss. Now, we all do it in our own way, but folks, it's okay to show lamentation. Number three, depression, loneliness, withdrawal, exhaustion. Again, just notice the progression. There's shock, there's denial, there's pain, there's the emotions, and then possibly, and it's not for everyone, not everyone feels depressed, but there's that idea of, what do I do with all these emotions? What do I do with all this pain? Look at number three there. One begins to feel isolated, as if God is no longer in heaven, as if God does not care. One is sure that no one else has ever grieved as they are grieving. You ever felt that way? That there's nobody that understands only you really understand your grief and nobody else has a concept of it? It's an easy concept to have. It's an easy feeling to have. And again, it is true that nobody understands your grief unless you talk to them, you share with them, you let them know where you're coming from. We'll talk about depression tomorrow at 5:00. I believe we're doing a session on that. But the point of the matter is, it's very easy to become withdrawn and to be despondent. Because of all that's going on. And that's why, as a church family, and I guess I'll go ahead and say this, as a church family, we need to be there during those times. We need to be checking on them. Now, I'm not talking about every single moment of every single day, but we need to let folks know, hey, it's okay to feel what you feel. It's okay because just let them talk. So it's easy to understand that. And of course, this depression we're talking about here is a grief kind of depression. We're not talking about the clinical depression. That's another subject that perhaps we'll look at sometime tomorrow. Down number four, go ahead.
Let me mention something. Some physical sensations of depression, loneliness, withdrawal could be these: hollowness in stomach, tightness in the chest and or the throat, an oversensitivity to noise, breathlessness, weakness in muscles, lack of energy, dry mouth. One person told me, before my loss, I never did this, but I find myself sometimes in loss just doing,
look at it again.
And I've had a lot of people say, yeah, I used to not do that either, but now I catch myself, sighing. In that manner, behaviors may be seen because of depression, loneliness, withdrawal, and sleep disturbances, absent-minded behavior, social withdrawal, dreams of the deceased, sighing, restless overactivity, crying, carrying or hiding objects of the deceased, and talking incessantly. Now, back to the idea of hiding objects of the deceased or keeping those. I've known a lot of people who have told me, especially mates, when they lose a loved one, that They wanted to hold on to something that helped them remember that loved one. And I've had some ladies tell me that when, you know, after my husband died, I'd sleep in his shirts because it had a smell to him that was still important. That's certainly something that's nothing wrong with whatsoever in that manner, but that was very important to them. Going to the grocery store for some people becomes a nightmare. It's hard to think about buying for one when you bought for two or you bought for more, or just the idea of going back to someplace social after all the other things. Those are just some of the things that people talk about in regards to. And then when they come to church, where am I going to sit? If this was our seat and he's no longer here or she's no longer here, am I going to sit here again? Because if I have to, or if I do, I'm going to sit alone. That's really important for us not to allow them, or I didn't say that right, to try to enable them to either sit with you or you sit with them. That's important in those first few days, weeks, whatever the case may be. Because that's one of the things that they have to think about. When I come back to church, we had our pew. It's not going to be the same. They may choose to go somewhere else in the building. That's just, they're trying to cope. That's all they're trying to do. But I know of a church in Albertville, Alabama, that used as a ministry that same idea, that whenever a loved one died and there was a widow or a widower, that for the first several weeks, some of their care groups would automatically, systematically sit with that loved one for a period of time. And they would take turns doing so. Small thing? Yes. You think they never forgot it? Sure. That was important. Somebody was there. And that means a great, great deal.
Our timekeeper says we have 1 minute now.
Wow.
Okay. Which is why you have these notes. So we're going to go ahead and just stop right there because there's no way for us to even move on. And during the break, if you see something on the rest of the pages that you'd like to talk to one of us about, then we'll be glad to do so, or tomorrow. But again, just understand in regard to these phases, they're just suggestions. You know, don't go back and check, okay, that's me, or that's not me. You know, please don't get wrapped up. Again, 1969, Elizabeth Kubler Ross did not mean that there was only five stages only. Okay? So, and we need to remember that today. So we're going to take a break. Is that right? And then we're going to come back and try to finish at least a few more pages of our time together tonight. Thank you so much for being with us. Let's take a break for a moment.